Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back. It's my pleasure to welcome Craig R. Smith to the show. He's chairman of Swiss America. You've probably heard of that company. He's also author of The Great Withdrawal, How Progressives' 100-Year Debasement of America and the Dollar Ends. Craig, welcome. How are you today?
Jason, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good. The pleasure is all mine. Hey, are you coming to us from the greater Phoenix area?
I am indeed. I'm actually on the east side of Camelback Mountain right now.
Fantastic. Well, we're both in the Valley of the Sun then, where we've got this magnificent weather. So what are some good examples of progressivism today and what it's doing to our country?
Well, you know, when Lowell and I sat down and wrote the book, we went back historically and looked at progressivism and what its real nature is. And probably a better way to put it, Jason, would be to talk about collectivism. If you were to go through, I know people will bristle when I say this, but whether it's Stalinism, Leninism, Communism, Maoism,
Marxism,
all Marxism, all the isms.
Obamaism.
All the collectives believe that the collective is more important than the individual. And we believe that it's the individual and their personal freedom and their personal liberty that allows them to be creative to make the nation a greater nation. And, of course, we first saw this occur in 1912 when our first openly progressive politician by the name of Woodrow Wilson, who was the president of Princeton University at the time, became our president. And he was very vocal about it. He believed in having federal income tax, and he believed in many open policies to, if you will, help other people. Well, there was only one problem. The federal income tax had been found unconstitutional several times by our Supreme Court. So, if something is unconstitutional, well, by golly, let's just change the Constitution. And next thing you know, we have the 16th Amendment. And that set the stage on top of creating a Federal Reserve System, which is a central bank, and then we could go into the other changes that he made, set the stage for Franklin Roosevelt, who during the Great Depression recalled gold, basically put work programs into place, again, the collective, put Social Security into place to make sure that people that were in trouble had somebody to protect their retirement. And then, of course, Mr. Johnson came along in 1964 with the Great Society. So while I don't believe that they're evil, nefarious people that are trying to destroy the nation by their progressivism, they're just unfortunately, their intentions are good, but the net outcomes of progressivism have always been negative. And that's why we're trying to change that direction through the book.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if their intentions actually are good. People like to give them the benefit of the doubt, but history and geography have proven that everywhere on the planet and at every time in history, their policies don't work. They make people weaker. They destroy countries. And if you want an example of it right here in the U.S., just look at Detroit. Look at any other place where and talk about a misnomer, progressives. I mean, with the most regressive policies on earth, any of those places are in bad shape. They're in terrible shape.
Well, it's funny that you bring Detroit up because as we were finishing our book, Detroit file bankruptcy.
Yep.
And we actually had to go back and beg the printer to give us an extra 2 weeks. And we actually start the book off in the great city of Detroit, where originally 296,000 workers were pumping out an incredible amount of productivity of America. And then a gentleman by the name of Mayor Coleman Young, an openly progressive person, literally embraced unions and so on and so forth, and you know the outcome. Detroit now, you know, all of its population is left. And you're right, Jason. If you look at world history, there is not one ism, if you will, that has ever survived, that has gone on to greatness like we did in the United States of America. And that's why we believe progressivism, if it's not stopped, the end is a loss of freedom, a loss of liberty, and unfortunately a destruction of our U.S. dollar, which around the world is considered to be the reserve currency and the creme de la creme.
So why do you say ism, though? I mean, conservatism is an ism.
Yeah, I guess that's a very fair thing to say. I guess I'd have to say conservatism, though, believes in the individual, where when you talk about socialism or progressivism or liberalism, and see, the liberals couldn't really call themselves liberals anymore, because really, if you go back 100 years ago, what we considered liberals are conservative today. You know, small government, personal responsibility, that was the liberal approach in America. And I think that what progressives have done is really allow the nation to believe, or lead people to believe, that we're supposed to help one another. Well, I agree in helping each other. I love when Barack Obama quoted, you know, "I'm my brother's keeper." Little does he forget that that was quoted by a murderer who just killed his brother. Okay, but that being set aside,
who was that, okay, by the way? I didn't know that.
Cain and Abel.
Oh,
came from,
okay.
Cain and Abel. But here's what's interesting. I believe in helping my fellow brother out, but not at the end of a gun barrel of an IRS agent, or at the end of a government that says, "I want 50% of your income, so if you don't want to help people, I'm going to force you to help people." Years ago, the churches and charities and neighbors and friends took care of one another. I mean, I have a 93-year-old gentleman who's a client of the firm for years, and he went through the Great Depression, and he remembers when neighbors took care of neighbors. I mean, people didn't die on the streets of hunger.
Well, I don't know about that. Certainly, during the days of, I mean, what era are you talking about? Give us a time frame.
Talking about 1929 through 1938.
Okay, during the Depression then.
Right.
Saying before the big, well, we had Wilson before that, and then we were in the middle of FDR. So
No. But I'm saying that when we as a nation did not have a huge government taking care of cradle to grave mentality thinking people, we didn't have people dying in the streets. And I think most people think, well, if we don't have health care for everybody and welfare for everybody, and,
well, I think we should have free Netflix for everybody too, don't you think? I mean, that's people are entitled to watch movies.
Well, you know, it's kind of like what we did with unemployment. You know, in a book we wrote years ago called Crashing the Dollar, we cite the examples of up in Sweden, you know, where they used to have 5 years unemployment, and then they cut it back to 3 years. Guess what? They found out people went back to work in 3 years. They cut it back to 2 years. Now it's all the way down to a year. Well, we in America did just the opposite. We extended to 99 weeks, and when that ran out, people went on disability. And we just
we've never had so many disabled people in America. This is the new thing. It's the disability industrial complex.
Yeah. And really, that is a progressive idea. That is an idea that comes from the progressive side of the Social Security. It comes through SSI. And look, Social Security was a well-intentioned program. But Jason, the mathematics of it don't work.
Well, it's a Ponzi scheme.
And they can't work,
obviously.
And that's why they're broke.
Yeah, right. Well, first of all, I wonder why are you willing to use their terms, Craig? I mean, the word progressive to me is a positive word. That should mean we're moving forward, we're advancing, progress. Who doesn't want progress, right? Yet they have commandeered that word, and they're policies are regressive. I mean, they don't create progress. Obama wants us driving a proletariat car, as Thomas Woods calls it, which I think is a great way to put it. This is just ridiculous. I mean, it's this cronyism that goes on. It's absurd.
Oh, yeah, indeed. And I suppose I call them what they call themselves because, you know, it's kind of like in discussing with you, if I was to bring up a term proletariat car while I'm doing the Neil Cavuto show, I suspect it probably wouldn't go over very well.
I don't know. Neil wouldn't disagree with you too much.
Well, no, I'm sure off the air he wouldn't.
If it were Katie Couric, yes. If she knew what it meant.
I doubt I'd be invited back. But nevertheless, you're right. I use their terms only because of this. In my book, there's hundreds of footnotes, and we quote them, and we look at their materials, and we look at their programs. And as you said earlier, they fail. They don't work. And this is what I don't think Americans think. You know, I think so many people believe if the rich pay enough taxes, well, hey, guess what? If you take every single dollar of every single rich person next year and all their income, I mean, that would just about cover half the deficit every year.
It won't work. So, taxation won't work, obviously. There's not enough to tax.
You bet. We have to go back to how this nation was built, and we need to change the systems. Welfare is on a crash course to destruction. Medicaid and Medicare. This new entitlement, Obamacare, if you will, the Affordable Care Act, you know as well as I do, Jason, it is already failing. It will fail. It could single-handedly bankrupt this nation if we're not very careful.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. Okay, so several things here. First of all, you won't believe who I had on the show last week. I couldn't believe it either, but Mr. Noam Chomsky himself. So one of the things he was saying, and he cut my interview a little bit short, I think I was grilling him a little too hard, and I think he was, I don't think he had answers to my questions. But one of the things he was saying is he was defending all the various stimulus omnibus plans of the money printing and so forth, saying that they're working, and they worked. That's exactly what we should have done. We did the right thing. And that can be debated. I don't think we did the right thing. I think we should stop letting the government pick winners and losers and let the market sort them out. And it'll happen a lot faster, and things will rebound a lot faster if we do it that way. But well, the question is, how much is enough? I said to Noam, I said, so, you know, if you believe that we should just stimulate, well, then why not print up $1 million for every American citizen and even the non-citizens? Heck, why don't we just give it to everybody? Maybe everybody in the world we should just give $1 million to. 7 billion times a million, and then they'll go and spend that $1 million that we just handed them for no reason. And won't that just create this utopian economy?
I mean, well, of course,
aren't there consequences?
And, and you and I know the answer, and you and I know that Noam is not on solid ground.
Right, but he says, here's what he cites, just before you go on. Let me just give you some of his ammunition, okay? He says, look, inflation is low. The economy is improving.
By whose definition?
Well, I agree with you. But it's still a lot lower than it should be, Craig. I mean, it seems like the inflation would have hit much more severely by now, by all mathematical standards. I mean, look, are you better off than you were $5 trillion ago? Well, seemingly, but there's a lag time. And I mean, it seems like we should have more inflation by now. How are they keeping that genie in the box, or that Pandora in the box, I should say?
Well, let's first start with the premise, because I think you're absolutely right. We have spent, you know, the Fed's balance sheet's about $4 trillion right now, and so there's been several other, you know, trillion dollars that have spent here and there, and another increase in our debt. And what do we have for it? Well, if you look at the official number of the BLS, which is 7.1% unemployment, you and I both know it's closer to 14 or 15%. If we count the U6 into the number, the underemployed or those who just stopped looking. Okay, let's look at real GDP. If you adjust GDP, you know, they're all talking about now, wow, all of a sudden it's 2.88%. Well, I would argue we have negative growth right now, not positive
growth. After inflation, you're correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. And so for Chomsky to be able to say that stimulus has worked, he's incorrect. And you are exactly right. We went back And we basically, and again, we can't prove this because it's a theory, but we looked at what would happen if we had just stopped at the $887 billion infusion.
The first one. Yeah, right.
Right. Put into the economy and then just sat back and allowed private business. Because keep in mind, that $3 trillion or $4 trillion that the Fed balance sheet has been expanded, that's sitting on corporate balance sheets now and on bank balance sheets. That money's available. It's just not coming into the system. Why isn't it? Because it's not a matter of not enough money or not enough stimulus. It's a matter of confidence. No business owner has confidence to take that money off his balance sheet. I'm a perfect example of it. I mean, I have a considerable amount of money sitting in the bank for an expansion program. And when Mr. Obama took office and I watched him ram healthcare through, we're still sitting on that money, Jason, because I don't know what the next curveball is this guy's going to throw at me from Washington. So what Chomsky has to realize is you can print all the money in the world, but unless you have confidence in an economy, you're not going to see it spent. And Mr. Barack Obama has done more to erode the confidence that business people have in this nation than any president that I can think of, including Jimmy Carter. And that's why we don't have growth. That's why you don't have expansion of the economy. Not because there hasn't been plenty of stimulus. It's because we have horrible policy coming out of Washington, D.C. It's always blaming the other guy. And then we have the gridlock when the Republicans dig in. And it takes a leader to break those log jams, like we saw with Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, or we saw with Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich. You don't see that with Barack Obama and John Boehner. And I don't think it's a direct result of John Boehner's fault.
No, I agree. Obama just seems like he thinks he's the emperor or something. I mean, it's ridiculous. The guy he won't work with people. He somehow gives speeches and convinces his supporters, who will refuse to see any evidence whatsoever of reality, that he's this reasonable guy, yet he plays dirty. He plays like a Chicago thug.
Oh, completely. I mean, if you look at the cronyism, and you mentioned it earlier, the crony capitalism that has gone on during this administration, and look, we've had it in all administrations. George Bush had it. Bill Clinton had it. I mean,
it always exists. It's just the only question is, will the government be larger, and then will the crony capitalism be larger, or will it be smaller, and there will be less of it?
Exactly. And that's what my concern. And that's what my concern is, Jason. And you know this because you've studied it. Whenever the government gets this big, it squeezes the private sector. Now, is the private sector going to do better things with the money than the government's going to do? Of course it is, because you have accountability and you have success and failure. And like you said, this administration's into picking winners and losers. I was not a proponent of the TARP.
Actually, we should change it. We should say, Craig, they're into picking supporters and losers.
Well,
because the people who get picked are their supporters. Now. Yeah.
Well, I find it very ironic now that they're banging on Jamie Dimon for a $13 billion fine, when in fact they forced him to buy the bank that caused the problem in the first place. But nevertheless,
a lot of those things are window dressing anyway. They're like watching a wrestling match on TV. It's all staged.
Sure, and you get in, it comes in one hand and goes out the other. But a perfect example, and this will show you why the confidence has been so devastated, Jason, and this is a perfect example. Bonds for years have been known as the gentleman's investment. And why have they been? Because bonds were always 100% guaranteed. If you owned a bond always paid. The worst that happened, you had to hold it the duration of the bond, but you always got paid.
What kind of bond? Are you talking about government bonds or any bond?
No, I'm talking about corporate bonds.
Okay.
Okay? Because you were protected by the underlying asset.
Yeah, not if you own GM.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Now, General Motors has got bondholders. And what does Mr. Obama do? He walks in and with the swipe of a pen, he wipes the bondholders out, takes care of all of his buddies over at the UAW who are giving him plenty of money for his 2012 campaign, and for the first time in American history, government fiat wiped out bondholders. And now you wonder why people don't want to make investments in certain companies for fear that the government could walk in and wipe out their investments? And that's a perfect example of why we don't have the confidence in this presidency to control, or not to control, but to encourage this economy to grow. And until he moves on, you're going to see it this way, Jason. It's just that simple.
But Craig, all those bondholders that have those GM bonds, they're just these super rich investors, right?
Yeah, that's right. They just
they don't need the money.
Yeah, they were trust babies to begin with. And, you know, you didn't earn it. I mean, the government helped you earn it, for Pete's sakes. And then, and that whole sense of thinking is what's hurt us. And so, you know, why do I call them progressives? Okay. I guess you could call them Marxists. I guess you could call them Leninists. You could call, matter of fact, I'm starting to hear more people starting to refer to them as communists and not getting the blowback that you used to get. But the reality is that that's what they are. And if you look, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but if you look at the planks of the manifesto, the Communist Manifesto, we fulfilled all of them. And what did Lenin say? The capstone of a great socialist society will be when we mandate health care provided by the government. Well, Mr. Obama just put that capstone into place, did he not?
Yep.
So we're just pointing out the obvious in the book. And what we point out in the book is that, look, there are ways to change this. We hear all the time about separation of church and state, right? We've got to separate the church from the state. Okay, without that, we can't. Well, how about separation of economy and state?
Yeah.
You know, how about separation of money and state, or business
right.
and state,
yeah.
or commerce and state, or science and state?
Very good. So I love those slogans. Those are great. Separation of economy and state. That would be great. Hey, let me ask you this though. What can I mean? I think we all know the problem. It's pretty severe, actually. Probably more severe than it's ever been. What can Americans do to decentralize and diversify their lives and survive and hopefully thrive during this time?
On a personal basis, or
personal
as
basis?
A citizen, you mean?
Personal.
Well, on a personal basis, obviously, in the case of your money, you diversify. You know, you have a portion of your money in real estate and in bonds and stocks and gold and cash. I mean, you well diversify yourself and not have all your eggs in one basket. As it relates to being a citizen, you want to demand out of your politicians things like a national sales tax versus a federal income tax, which is unconstitutional. Or for sure, we should be demanding a balanced budget amendment. I mean, can you imagine if we had a balanced budget amendment?
Let me give you the argument against that, though. Okay, so people...
Well, with the exception of a war or something.
Right, no, I understand. But, you know, a lot of these wars are completely fabricated too. I mean, thank you, Vladimir Putin, by the way, for keeping us out of another one about a month and a half ago. You know, warmongers McCain and Obama were going at it, waiting for their kickback from the military-industrial complex. This is like absurdity. They were the way they were on the warpath, and Putin just put an end to it. It was great. I mean, but the one argument, though, I mean, the balanced budget amendment, I agree with you, you know, on the surface, it seems like a great idea. But businesses and individuals use debt in a prudent manner sometimes, hopefully, and governments could even potentially use it in a prudent manner, too, to grow the economy and grow their business, you know, business people and individuals to grow their lives. I mean, debt can be used very strategically. Of course, the government won't do it that way. We know this because what governments do is they pander to voters to buy votes, and they don't do the best thing for the country. They do the best thing to get them and their cronies elected or to hold power. I mean, even Hugo Chavez was known for that. You know, in Venezuela, he did a lot of handouts, and the people liked him, although they never really looked at the fact that the reason the whole country's so poor is because of him, you know, on the macro level.
But, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because that is, in essence, the problem. Okay, I mean, Alan Greenspan created a situation early on where he realized that perpetual prosperity was possible by manipulating the money system. I mean, you know, we talk about the Chinese manipulating the yuan and the RMB. It's nothing compared to what our Federal Reserve does. And They wanted perpetual prosperity so people could live, you know, like you said, at a certain point, everybody should have Netflix and this and that. The reality is you can't have perpetual prosperity. Economies are like a set of lungs. They breathe in, they breathe out. They breathe in, they breathe out. You have to have recessions and contractions. And going back to your point, debt, when used properly and subsequently paid back, can do phenomenal things. And you're absolutely right. I mean, put it in the private sector. A guy goes and borrows $50 million. He buys a piece of property. He builds a factory on it. He fills it with people. They produce things. That's what's called creating wealth. And when he's productive enough, he pays back that $50 million. The government could do that, Jason, but they don't. Why? You answered it. Because they buy political favors. Instead of taking the money and paying it back to where it belongs, they spend more of it because they buy more votes. And until we break that cycle of money and politics, it's going to continue. Nothing's going to change. And that's why I believe it starts with a balanced budget amendment where they can't borrow money, where they have to live within their means. Or a national sales tax where you base it off consumption and you encourage people to save because the accumulation of capital allows people to build together. Look, I'm not one of these guys that believes we shouldn't have any government. But I believe the government should be very limited to the scope that the Constitution laid out. And when you look at that Constitution, and again, I know I'm preaching to the choir here. It people say, it was written 200 and some odd years ago. It's not applicable. It is perfect in every way, in my opinion. And when it's brought together with free markets and capitalism and the rule of law, and there's where we're missing, because, see, a Madoff can go do something and get away with it for years and not be put in jail. A bank can go rip somebody off and not be put in jail. An illegal can come across the border and not be put into jail. If we just enforce the laws we have on the books, Jason, and we go back to the Constitution and we allow free markets, and look, if some guy breaks the rules and he cheats somebody, he goes to jail. You do that, this country would be just fine. But when we stopped enforcing the laws and stopped enforcing the Constitution and, quite frankly, started ignoring the Constitution, that was the beginning of what's got us to $17 trillion worth of short-term debt and now over $88 trillion worth of long-term liabilities.
And some say
it's not going to, I mean, it's going to break.
And just so you know, yeah, I mean, that $88 trillion number, some say it's as high as $220 trillion. So these unfunded mandates we have coming in the future. And it is unbelievable. I mean, mathematically, it's just, I don't know how we're ever going to get out of it. However, I do have a question for you on that. What is the likelihood of recession, deflation, inflation? How do you see this working out?
Well, we clearly have to have inflation, and I would argue that we are on the Weimar Republic path. You said, you know, how come it hasn't happened yet? How come inflation hasn't come back into the system yet? Part of it's because of the way that we calculate the number. You know, gasoline prices can double, but if your computer drops in half, we've had no inflation. So keep in mind, in Weimar Germany, in the years 1921, 1922, they were very productive years in Germany, full employment, very low inflation, and then 1923, the money created velocity. Money started coming out, and it started getting into the system. That's why, in a program I did this morning, I said the biggest challenge Janet Yellen's going to have is trying to drain the $4 trillion out of the system, and she's not going to be able to, and that's why we believe that, you know, hyperinflation, the term hyperinflation means a 50% increase in the price of goods and services over a 30 calendar day period. I'm not sure we're going to see that, but are we going to see 18, 19% inflation, you know, the 14, 15% that we saw during the Carter administration? You better believe it, and then some. Is it going to come in 2013? Probably not. But by 14 and 15, you can assure yourself, because look, the other day the Chinese said, we are now going to put together the people's money and we want to start to compete in the international currency markets. And let me tell you, we lose our reserve currency status, it's game over for the United States as it relates to inflation. because then you would have to print everybody money, and then you will have hyperinflation like we had in Weimar Germany. So let's not think just because we've gotten away with it for a few years since 2008, 2009, means we can get away with it for much longer.
Yeah, well, that certainly seems true. You know, I just wonder, though, how long we can maintain our debt rating, our reserve currency status. I mean, what do you think? Are we in for another downgrade?
I believe we are. And I believe when we went from AAA to AA plus, you know, keep in mind, at AAA, that means you have zero risk in lending money to these people. When you go to AA plus, that means now there's risk in lending money to America. And I believe we're going to A plus or AA, one of the two. And let me tell you why. Because the rating agencies made it very clear in 2011. The reason they downgraded us is because we didn't come out of there with a viable plan of how to reduce our deficits. Now, we have the sequester. It kicked in, which, by the way, Mr. Obama's taking credit for, that he said would be the end of the world, and it wasn't the end of the world. It actually cut our deficits in half.
Right.
But they are looking for a real plan. If we go to the credit agencies, or we come out of this next budget battle, which will be February 7th, and we say, here's the plan, and it's a viable plan, and it's going to create growth and reduction of deficits and reduction of government spending, we'll probably go back to AAA. But if we don't have a realistic plan, we're going to continue to be downgraded. And Jason, as sure as I'm sitting here, when I saw that announcement the other day about the Chinese wanting to take the people's money and have it compete on a reserve currency basis, and they've been buying thousands of tons, metric tons of gold over the last 4 or 5 years, don't kid yourself. The United States of America, we are the reserve currency of the world. We're the first debtor nation to ever have that connotation, and we're the largest debtor in the world. And let me tell you, when you're in debt like we are, there's three ways to deal with it. You either restructure it to where you can handle it, you default on it, which we've seen South American countries do, or you inflate your way out of it. And I happen to believe we're going to inflate our way out of it, lose our reserve currency status, and we'll be trading oil and the other commodities in various currencies. You'll have Russian rubles being traded for Chinese RMB, and you'll see Brazilian real being traded for U.S. dollars, and then America is going to have to compete in the currency markets, and we're not going to be able to, because how do you compete when you've got the type of debt that we have? Now, what saves us in all this is we're still the greatest economy in the world. Don't kid ourselves to think we can hold on to that if we stay on this track. And that's why things have to change. That's why I'm doing this program with you. That's why I wrote the book. Thank God for programs like yours that are talking about this, because there's still a chance to fix it. But we better move quickly, because if we don't, it's going to break.
How bad do you think inflation could get? Like, what kind of percentage do you think it could be? Worse than Carter. And I think the worst official year under Carter was about, what was it, about 14% or so?
Yes,
something like that.
14 or 15%.
That was the official number, which means the real number was probably, you know, 8 points higher than that, right? so maybe it was 20%.
I think we could easily see inflation rates legitimately run at 20 to 25% and on a yearly basis. Now, here's the problem. How did Mr. Reagan deal with that? He allowed Volcker to raise interest rates to 22% and stop the inflation.
He broke the back.
Once the inflation gets started this time, it's not going to be that simple, because if we raise inflation, or if we raise interest rates with owing $17 trillion in immediate debt, my gosh, all of our revenue is going to go to pay the debt bill. That's why I happen to believe we're going to inflate our way out of this. And I wrote a report called The Uses of Inflation in a book a couple of years ago called The Inflation Deception. Most people don't realize that inflation steals from the masses in a way that not one in a million can realize it happened until it's already happened. That's what Lenin said. He said it was a very, very wonderful tool, because inflation steals from people. And what we've been doing, Jason, over the last 6 years, 5 years, is we've been using financial repression. And that's where our rate of interest that we pay a depositor at a bank, which is what, 0.25% now, and we have inflation rates at, what do they say, the official rate is 1.5% or whatever. The difference of that is going directly into the pockets of the banks and your United States government, and coming right out of the pockets of the average American.
Yep.
Financial repression is nothing new. It was nothing new. It was used after the Second World War and set us up for the Carter years of inflation. That's why I think it's going to be way worse this time.
It's very interesting that the Federal Reserve and the IRS were created right around the same time. About 100 years ago. Yeah. So exactly 100 years ago. It was 1913 for both. I thought the IRS came a little bit later than that, but whatever. So it was the same year they created both of them. Yet if you really think about it, when you have a central bank that can create money out of thin air, there's no reason to have an income tax. Because you can just simply use inflation as the tax. The government can spend irresponsibly and just print more money and devalue all the money currently in circulation and in savings, and they can tax people that way. Now what we have is we have a double taxation system where you have an income tax that doesn't recognize inflation properly, and then you have an inflation tax through the Treasury and the Federal Reserve. It's just silly that we have both.
Oh, that's correct. It's funny you bring that up. In our book, The Inflation Deception, we talk about, I believe his name was Rummel. He was one of our Federal Reserve chair people in the late 40s, early 50s. And he published a white paper entitled Taxes Are Obsolete for Revenue. And his argument is what you just laid out, Jason. He said, we don't have any need for an income tax. We can just do it through the creation of money. But at the time, we were on a gold standard. So he argued, just take us off the gold standard. We don't need a federal income tax. We'll just do it by using inflation as the tax. Well, the only problem is we are off the gold standard now. So his theory is, and so you're absolutely right. You know, so there is no need for income tax when you're not on a gold standard. And that's why, if you remember, it was Richard Nixon who did two things that I will never forgive him for. Number one, he created the EPA, for Pete's sakes. And number two, he closed the gold window, which he was given no choice of, because you cannot continue to expand a welfare state under a gold standard. The two are incompatible. One has to give.
Yeah. Very good points. Well, folks, invest for this. Be careful. Be prudent. One of the strategies I like is own commodities with long-term fixed-rate debt against them. My choice is real estate. Yours is probably gold. But either way, you got to have some hedge against inflation.
Well, I like real estate a lot as well. And I know that prices have been depressed, but I agree with you completely, because you're shorting the dollar, which is going to go lower, and you're going long a commodity of real estate that will always ultimately go up. And that was a great strategy in the 70s. People made a lot of money. And if you remember, inflation ravaged the stock investments of the 70s and made people that were in real estate fortunes. So I agree with that completely. And I do believe in gold, because gold is a currency, and I think we are going to be challenged on a currency basis. And just so you know, for your listeners, Jason, I told you this earlier, if people would like to call 800-289-2646. That's the number over at Swiss America, 800-289-2646. Mention that they were listening to your broadcast, and they will send you a complimentary copy of the book, The Great Withdrawal. There's no obligation, no expense. If you want information on products we have, great. Just ask the guy. He'll put it in the packet. They'll pay the postage and everything. All I'm trying to do, I got the publisher to print 10,000 copies for me to do this with, because I'm trying to get the message out. You see, I'm 59 years old right now, Jason. My grandchildren are going to be faced with this. My children are already faced with this. And I decided that if I can't leave my country in better shape to my children than I received it, then what kind of man am I? So I'm preparing my own family to make sure they're in that shape. I'm hopeful through my book I can do it throughout the entire nation. Now, people say you're crazy, you're one man, it can't be done. I don't know. With people help like you that are helping and getting the word out, I think we can turn the thing around before it's too late. I really do.
Good stuff. Well, Craig R. Smith, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for talking about the book. Folks, get your free copy there, and appreciate you coming on, and just keep getting the word out.
Thank you, Jason. It was great to be with you.
You know, sometimes I think of Jason Hartman as a walking encyclopedia on the subject of creating wealth.
Well, you're probably not far off from the truth, Penny, because Jason actually has a 3-book set on creating wealth that comes with 60 digital download audios.
Yes, Jason has that unique ability to make you understand investing the way it should be. It's a world where anything less than 26% annual return is disappointing.
I love how he actually shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I also like how he teaches you to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And the entire set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered at a savings of $94.
That's right. And to get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series, complete with over 60 hours of audio and 3 books, just go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.